I'm Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Zoltan Rona. And I reviewed his book, Vitamin D, The Sunshine Vitamin, but I also reviewed his site and found out he knows about a whole lot of things, not just vitamin D. So I suspect we'll get to cover some of those things, too, tonight. I hope so. How are you, Dr. Rona?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for taking the time to come on my show.
Oh, my pleasure.
So before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and how you came to do what you do, because you're not just a regular old conventional doctor. You're a doctor plus, as far as I'm concerned, kind of like Norm, and where they can find you.
Well, I started off doing complementary and alternative medicine early on in my medical practice. I'm a general practitioner, but I have a fair amount of extra training in biochemistry and clinical nutrition. And so over the years, I incorporated a lot of information about these other fields into my general practice, and gradually I shifted my practice more towards a preventive type of practice as opposed to an interventional. So I've been doing this now for over 32 years. And I've written 11 different books on the subject. And I still have a private medical practice in Toronto. And my website, if people want to reach me, it's www.mydoctor.ca/Dr. Zoltan Rona. And on my website, there's information about my practice as well as information about my books and quite a few other articles on natural medicine, natural healing, and people have questions, even my email address is there.
So that's kind of a long website for people to remember, so why don't you spell your name, and that way they can just Google you if they can't find you.
Sure, it's Zoltan, Z-O-L-T-A-N, last name is Rona, R-O-N-A.
And what made you start going into preventive medicine? I mean, there aren't very many people like you out there. Just curious.
Well, I was a tournament tennis player when I was a lot younger, and I was always interested in ways of improving my performance. And when I got into medical school, there was virtually nothing on natural ways of improving athletic performance. And so this is something that I studied on my own, and I started to take courses outside of medicine for that, and gradually I got more and more interested in the field.
My ex-husband was a tournament tennis player.
Oh, really?
His name was Howard Herr. Did you know him?
No, I'm afraid
from
I don't
South
know
Africa.
The name.
He didn't really hit his height until we got married, because he partied a lot, I think, and when we got married and he settled down about 15 years ago, he did really well, like in the top ten in the world over 40, but that, you know, doesn't do you too much good by the time you're that age, money wise anyway.
Well, it's a sport you can play all your life, and even competitively, it's a lot of fun even at ages well over 40 and 50.
It's a good sport. Okay. To start off with, let's go ahead and I want to talk about your vitamin D book, but before the end of the interview, I want to talk about some other things, too. But first of all, could you please discuss the forms of vitamin D and why you prefer one over the other?
Well, basically, people will know vitamin D in two forms. One is vitamin B2, which is the vegetarian form. And then there's vitamin D3, which is the vitamin D that comes from cod liver oil and from fish oils and from animal sources. So those are the two major forms. Most of the research that's out there over the past 20 years has been done with vitamin D3, and vitamin D3 is considered to be, by most experts, a little more active than vitamin D2, which is the plant-based form. But there are other experts who say that the two forms are equivalent. So right now, the jury is out on that, and both are, I think, quite active. You'll find that in foods that are fortified with vitamin D, such as milk and soy products, they usually use vitamin D2, which is the plant-based form. And it seems that that is very good for most people who are of the vegan persuasion.
You, in your book, you recommend 10,000 IUs of vitamin D. Can you be a little bit more specific? 10,000, how often?
10,000 units a day for most healthy adults. It's been shown that unless you take 4,000 units a day, you're not going to increase the blood levels very much. And in order to help prevent cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and about 50 other diseases, you need, I think, at least 10,000 units a day if you're an adult.
What about children? I have a 10-year-old and a 17-year-old. What kind of things should they take, children?
Well, I think if you're over 12, between 5 and 10,000 units a day, depending on your blood levels. And for most children under between 6 and 12, probably about 5,000 units a day would be optimal. Now, these are optimal doses. These are not the doses that are recommended by the government and by most doctors, who are unfortunately at least 10 years behind the times when it comes to research.
And does it matter if you're fat or thin?
Yes, it does. If you tend to be overweight, the more overweight you are, the more vitamin D you will need, and that's been proven by all kinds of research. So for someone who's like 300 pounds, they may need 20,000 or 30,000 units a day just to keep, you know, in good health.
So what would you consider, let's say, a 5'6" woman or man who weighs, I don't know, what's an average weight? So we can kind of gauge an average weight for a woman, say 150 pounds, average weight for a man, 80 or so?
Yeah.
Would that be like 5,000 a day?
That would be about 10,000 a day for both of those.
Okay. And does vitamin D affect your calcium levels?
Absolutely. Vitamin D, well, it's one of its best-known features is that it controls where calcium goes. So if you're deficient in vitamin D, for example, calcium will go to the wrong places. It'll go into the arteries and form hardening of the arteries. It'll go into the kidneys and form kidney stones. And it'll escape out of the bones and cause osteoporosis or osteopenia, a loss of calcium from the bones. In children, it manifests itself as a condition called rickets, where the loss of calcium from the bones causes malformations in the bones and sometimes fractures and sometimes deformities. And all of these conditions are quite devastating, and they require vitamin D to be normal.
So if you're taking vitamin D with a regular, I would assume that most of my listeners are not on like your regular fast food diet that most Americans are on, that they're trying to eat, you know, more vegetables and less cooked vegetables and probably less dairy. So if that's the case, should they supplement with calcium?
Yeah, this is one of the things that my book emphasizes, is the fact that since 80 to 90% of the North American population is deficient in vitamin D and is not exactly following a perfect kind of diet, and even if they were trying to maximize the vitamin D through diet, they wouldn't be able to do so. The advice here is to use supplements, and I discussed that in the book in great detail.
So the question was, though, should you, if you're taking vitamin D, should you supplement with calcium?
Well, it depends on the individual.
Considering that most of my listeners will probably lean a little bit away from fast food, will probably a lot away from fast food diets, and would probably be more vegetables, less meat, and less dairy products, should they supplement And I know that you don't know without testing, but just generally speaking, should they supplement
generally
with calcium?
Generally speaking, yes, they should be supplementing with calcium. Yes.
And how much?
Average adult, 1,200 milligrams of calcium a day. And for women, especially during or before, or just before the menopause, probably they should go higher than that, 1,500 or maybe even 2,000. And then they definitely require more vitamin D at that time.
Okay. Now, would it, is that going to affect their magnesium and potassium levels?
It would probably affect their magnesium levels, and most of the time when I prescribe calcium, I also prescribe magnesium because the two should be well balanced. So a good 1-to-1 calcium to magnesium ratio in a supplement with vitamin D in high doses would be a very good idea in most cases. Now, all of this is, you know, given the fact that you've had biochemical testing to find out, to determine your specific levels of calcium and vitamin D and so on.
Of course. And if someone uses, you know, the new thing is transdermal magnesium. If they're using that, is it, assuming that one teaspoon has 150 milligrams of elemental magnesium, and they're going to probably get, what, 90% of that? How do you know much calcium to take with that?
Well, you should try to supplement a 1-to-1 ratio of calcium to magnesium. So if you're giving, like, 500 milligrams of magnesium, you should also take 500 milligrams of calcium.
Okay. All right. My next question would be, we know that vitamin D stores in fat, and if someone's supplementing, how do they know if they're toxic vitamin if they take too much?
Well, that's a good question. One of the things that happens if you take too much, and this is actually quite rare, is that the calcium levels start to go higher in the bloodstream. And that can produce problems like kidney stones or hardening of the arteries or arthritis, joint pain. It can, aside from that, it can produce things like nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. You can get a lot of different type of symptoms that know that let you know that you're in trouble.
Okay. What about mixed E-tocopherols? Does that play a role at all with vitamin D and calcium levels and arteries and things?
Well, yeah, vitamin E, or the vitamin E complex, as you refer to it, has a long history of being tremendously important in cardiovascular disease in improving or preventing hardening of the arteries, very much like vitamin D does. So they both have a very important role in controlling your circulation and, you know, preventing a lot of premature disease. So, like, vitamin E was one of the first vitamins. I remember when I first started off in this kind of practice, vitamin E was one of the first vitamins that I read about because at the time it was extremely popular, and everybody was trying to supplement with some vitamin E. Over the years, it's still important and it still has a major role, but its popularity has waned in comparison to vitamin D, especially recently.
And does it matter if you use mixed tocopherols rather than just the regular vitamin E you buy off the shelf at Walmart?
That's a good question. I would recommend that people try to get the mixed tocopherols and get the vitamin E complex. Some companies refer to it as Total E, and the reason for that is because it's been shown that that has much more beneficial activity for the heart and circulation, and it has less potential side effects. There have been some studies reported where vitamin E has been thought to increase the risk of cardiovascular disease, elevate blood pressure, and so on. And that kind of thing doesn't happen with the vitamin E complex. It just seems to happen with the synthetic form of vitamin E, the D-alpha tocopherol. So I would recommend people buy the vitamin E complex anytime they have a chance.
And when you look on the label, because I've looked at these labels at the drugstore and at the Walmart, they don't usually say mix. So how would someone recognize the proper E to take? Is DL, I can't remember exactly what it says.
Well,
does it? identified?
Yeah, D-alpha is the natural, D-L-alpha. D-L-alpha is the synthetic. And so most people wouldn't know that. So the right thing to do is look for a bottle that has the alpha, gamma, and tocotrienol. Look for the different types of tocopherols in the vitamin E bottle.
Okay, that helps a lot. Now, what about vitamin D and pharmaceuticals and statins?
About vitamin D and pharmaceuticals? Well, there are pharmaceutical forms of vitamin D, and there are generally, there's one called Rocaltrol, which is a synthetic form, and it's one that's used for people that have kidney disease and can't process vitamin D correctly if they're using a natural supplement. So that's a unique case, and most people would not be taking that unless it would be on prescription. The kind of vitamin D that I'm referring to is the kind that everyone makes when they're exposed to ultraviolet radiation. So it's made in your body, but it can also come from an outside source. So that would be your vitamin D3 supplement or vitamin D2 supplement.
So for people who take pharmaceuticals and take statins, does vitamin D interfere with that or affect it at all?
Vitamin D wouldn't interfere with it. It would probably help it, because one of the things that happens with the statins is that you lower your blood level of cholesterol, and your body requires cholesterol in order to manufacture vitamin D through the action of sunshine. So if you don't have enough cholesterol, you're not going to be able to make enough vitamin D through sunshine and through your skin. Consequently, you're going to need to supplement from an outside source, because you'll become vitamin D deficient eventually with those statins.
What was that last word? Oh, with the statins, okay.
The statins would basically cause you to, at some point, develop vitamin D deficiency, because you need cholesterol in order to make the vitamin D from sunshine.
I bet doctors forget to tell their patients that a great deal of the time.
Well, yeah,
I won't make you comment on that. I mean, you can if you want to, but I just know so many people on statins, and vitamin D is not one thing that's in their medicine regimen.
My advice to all of them is to get their blood levels checked, because it's almost a guarantee that they're vitamin D deficient. I see it every day in my practice with patients who are coming in to see me from other doctors, and you check their blood level of vitamin D, and it's almost always low.
Let's talk about cholesterol and the myelin sheath. If one has neuropathy, would that be an indication that their vitamin D, or would vitamin D be beneficial for them?
Absolutely. It's been shown, for example, in diseases like multiple sclerosis, where you have defects in the myelin sheath, that vitamin D can make a huge difference there. Vitamin D in combination with omega-3 fatty acids seems to help a great deal in repairing defects in the myelin sheath and improving symptoms of multiple sclerosis.
Would lecithin benefit? Does that have any benefit with vitamin D3 to help repair myelin sheath damage?
Well, lecithin may be involved, but it's not the most important factor. It's something that may also help with other diseases, other neurological diseases, especially those involving memory. So lecithin is something that can help in some cases of dementia in conjunction with vitamin D and other nutrients.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. I didn't know it helped dementia. What about, does vitamin D3 increase endorphins? And if so, how does that happen?
I haven't heard of it increasing endorphins, but I have heard of it being...
I think I read it in your book.
Pardon me?
I read it in your book.
That was in the book?
I thought
I was referring to the, not the endorphins, the, whatchamacallit, the serotonin receptor, vitamin D may be important for that. But it may also have an impact on endorphins, but I thought it was much more to do with the serotonin.
Well, tell me about that, because I'm interested in that, too. How does it help that?
Well,
that means it would help depression, right?
Seasonal affective disorder.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people think that that's from a lack of sunlight. It's a kind of a depression that occurs around this time of the year. But it's been shown that it has a lot to do with lower levels of vitamin D during this time of the year. And vitamin D is something that elevates serotonin levels. And so if you're deficient...
Hello?
If you're deficient in vitamin D, then one of the things that can occur is that serotonin levels go far too low. And as a result, you're more likely to become depressed that way.
That's very interesting. I had no idea about that either. I tried to read up, but I had not heard that. Could you explain the relationship between vitamin D and ACE inhibitors? Because so many people take those things.
Yes, vitamin D works in high doses. Works very much like an ACE inhibitor. ACE inhibitors are a large class of blood pressure lowering drugs, and what they do is they ACE stands for angiotensin converting enzyme. It's basically something that will lower the type of adrenaline that causes the blood pressure to go high. And so vitamin D will mimic the action of one of these ACE inhibitors and will help in controlling or lowering blood pressure.
I'm so glad to know that, because I have high blood pressure. And I took an ACE inhibitor one time, and it did help me, but I developed this terrible allergy to it, and it made my face swell up, you know, like a balloon. So if I were to increase my vitamin D, I could probably accomplish the same thing, right?
Yeah, you could if you got a high enough level. One of the other symptoms or side effects of ACE inhibitors is a cough. And there's a lot of people that develop severe coughs as a direct result of being on ACE inhibitors. So there's another role for vitamin D in that area.
That's amazing. Antibiotic properties, that was something that I'd never heard of. Can you talk about that?
Yes. What vitamin D does is it causes the body to manufacture more of a protein that works like an antibiotic. So it has a very important application in preventing flus and colds and all kinds of chronic infectious diseases. So, for example, what I would tell my patients, I wouldn't tell them to get a flu shot, because vitamin D works way better than a flu shot, I've found over the years, is if I tell my patients to take 10,000 units of vitamin D from October to May of each year, their chances of getting the flu are much less than they would be if they got the flu shot. There is actually several studies that show exactly the same thing, that vitamin D works like a vaccination. It basically will prevent a lot of infectious diseases from occurring. So people that have a tendency to get one cold after another or to suffer from the flu year in and year out, they're much better off if they started to take high doses of vitamin D.
So is it more antibiotic, or is it your immune system functioning better?
Well, it seems to boost up immunity. I think that it creates in your body a protein, and it creates an environment which is hostile to invading viruses, bacteria, and fungi. So vitamin D is something that basically alters or regulates the immune system in such a way that it's favorable to your health. It also seems to have an important impact on autoimmune disease. Like in my book, I go into how it seems to help with conditions like lupus and thyroiditis and rheumatoid arthritis and many other autoimmune diseases, where if the immune system is overregulated or overactive and causes damage to various organs, vitamin D will help dampen it. If it's too weak and it doesn't seem to be able to fight bacteria, viruses, or invading organisms, then it's going to boost up its activity. So vitamin D is an immune-regulating vitamin. It's quite amazing that it's able to do that, but that's basically what science has shown us.
Now, I have two questions. I'm going to say them both so I don't forget it, because after your explanation, I may forget and move on to the next thing. But you brought up the word fungi, so I want to know, number one, does vitamin D help with toxic mold problems? And number two, is it really a vitamin or is it a hormone, or is it both?
Well, yeah, a lot of people have said that vitamin D is more like a hormone because it acts to control quite a few different other hormones. So it's more of a hormone action that it has than as a vitamin, which is most vitamins are either cofactors to enzymes or they're cofactors in some kind of enzymatic reaction in the body. But vitamin D works more or less like a hormone. And your question about toxic mold, yes, it would help in your ability to resist any of the consequences of toxic mold exposure, because it's something that will regulate your immune system to help fight that. Mold tends to weaken or suppress an immune system, whereas vitamin D would tend to normalize or enhance it.
Well, now that we're on the topic of mold, I read something on your website that I'd never heard about, and that was calcium, is it declucurate? Is that the right word?
How do you spell that?
I think you called it CDG, calcium declucurate.
Declucurate.
G-L-U-C-A-R-A-T-E, calcium D-glucurate.
Oh, calcium D-glucarate.
Declarate, okay, sorry.
Calcium D-glucarate. Well, no, that's a form of calcium that helps the liver to detoxify chemicals. And it's also very important in terms of prevention and treatment of breast cancer, because many of the problems with breast cancer originate from what are called xenoestrogens. These are like chemicals in our environment from pesticides and from, plastics and a whole bunch of other environmental toxins which act like estrogens, and they basically will stimulate the development of breast cancer and prostate cancer. So calcium D-glucarate is something that the liver uses to inactivate or detoxify these xenoestrogens, and that's why it's so important.
I had never heard of it. So would it be beneficial for killing off mold in you if it detoxifies?
Yes, it would, because it's something that would activate the liver to detoxify your system much better, yes.
And
you can get that calcium D-glucarate, you can get it in the health food store. It's a fairly common supplement that almost any health food store would carry.
And does it have the same effects as calcium? Will it cause hardening of the arteries? And does it have the same effect as calcium?
No, it works in a somewhat different way. It's not going to be used by the body for bone building. In other words, it's basically going to be used for its detoxification properties.
I can't believe nobody ever talks about that. That sounds like such an amazing thing. I've never heard of it.
Most doctors who deal with cancer patients, especially those who deal with breast cancer and prostate cancer, would tend to recommend it a lot. There is a product that contains calcium D-glucarate in the health food store made by Advanced Orthomolecular Research. It's in all the health food stores. It's called Estro Detox, and it contains primarily calcium D-glucarate.
So would it, I would imagine that most women are estrogen dominant because of all the plastics in our soaps and our shampoos and our lotions and our fabric softeners and everything
That's
else
right.
that we use. So it sounds like that would be something that would good to do on a maintenance dosage all the time. Would it hurt you? Can you take too much?
You can't take too much of that. It's usually, people are recommending usually around 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day, and at that dose, it's not going to cause any problem.
And does it detox anything else? Is it detox metals or anything?
Well, it would detox pretty much anything because it's used by the enzymes in the liver that do the detoxification.
So it would help you also if you had a tendency to take a lot of Tylenol for headaches or ibuprofen or any other kind of pharmaceutical that gets stuck in your liver?
Yes, it would.
That's
it would probably
that's
help
great.
All of
That's a great thing to know. I had no idea. Okay, my next question is diabetes and vitamin D.
Yes.
What, does it help? What's the role? Does it help? And if it helps diabetes, does it also help hypoglycemia?
Yes. There are now a growing number of studies that show that the vitamin D does help control blood sugar. There is a an endocrinologist in the States by the name of Dr. Joe Prendergast who puts all of his diabetic patients on 50,000 international units of vitamin D a day. And over the years, he's found that none of them have had any of the usual complications of diabetes. So in other words, you could still have diabetes but not develop any of the complications thanks to vitamin D. And vitamin D does work also for hypoglycemia. People that have a low blood sugar reaction, vitamin D should be part of the treatment.
What does it do for hypoglycemia?
Well, it does tend to regulate the blood sugar upwards for
okay.
people that have, like, large dips of blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
It'll even out those dips.
So if that's true, and I believe you, that means that it could possibly play a role in addictions, treating addictions?
It could play a role in addictions. As I mentioned before, it helps keep serotonin levels high in the brain, and if it does that, then it's definitely going to help, you know, cravings for sweets, cravings for drugs. And so it should be part of any kind of treatment for addiction. It should be part of a treatment for any kind of mental disorder because vitamin D does tend to normalize brain chemicals.
I have been corresponding with this man. His name is Jurian Plessman down in Australia, who is an expert in addictions, and he said he used to be a parole officer, and he said every single one of the people that he would treat, he's a psychologist, I think, or a psychiatrist, I forget what he is, but every single one that he would treat had hypoglycemia. So he
yeah.
started putting them on a hypoglycemic diet, and their cravings went away, and they were able to control their addiction and stop using the drugs or the alcohol. So this seems like that it would be a very advantageous thing to add to that.
Absolutely.
I would imagine.
Oh, it is.
Okay. What about the role of refined foods and vitamin D depletion?
Well, refined foods tend to deplete more than just vitamin D. They tend to really do a number on your endocrine system, particularly your adrenal glands and your thyroid. I've seen so many people over the years with hypothyroidism and adrenal exhaustion and you name it. If they have a very high sugar diet and a high refined food diet, they tend to eventually develop one of those conditions. And vitamin D is tremendously important in helping in the recovery from that, but of course one has to look at the diet first and foremost and then assess for the micronutrients as well. And then treat accordingly.
Now, we had talked about vitamin D and calcium, but what about vitamin D and phosphorus? We don't hear very much about phosphorus. How do you
yeah,
know if you have a deficiency?
Most people have a diet that's very high in phosphorus, and as a result, they deplete calcium, which is why you hear so much about calcium. But phosphorus is ubiquitous in our diet. It comes from you know, many different sources, from red meats and comes from refined foods, and it's pretty much everywhere. I've never heard of phosphorus deficiency. Put it to you that way, I think most people they have the opposite problem. They get way too much phosphorus, and as a result of that, that depletes their calcium and magnesium and vitamins and so on.
Oh, okay. Can we get sufficient levels of vitamin D from food?
If you eat a fair amount of seafood and you consume some foods that are fortified with vitamin D, such as soy milk or regular milk, it is possible, but you're going to still need some sunshine in order to get optimal levels. So you may not develop the levels that cause rickets or osteoporosis, but you still may end up with a lot of other problems related to a greater need for vitamin D. So I think it's possible, but it's in Canada, for example, and northern United States, it just doesn't happen. People are just not able to get it from their diet.
Let's talk about sunshine for a minute. Do you really think it's possible in this today's world? We spend all of our time in an office or in a school. Is it really possible to get enough from the sun?
For most people, it's not possible. And not only is it not possible, but there are dermatologists and other doctors who are advising people to stay out of the sun because the sun will cause skin cancer. So we have a population that spends most of its time indoors, and the ones that can spend their time outdoors are frightened away by the advice that it may cause skin cancer if you go outdoors. So what we end up with is a population deficient in vitamin D as a direct result of all that. So what I'm recommending for people these days is during the summertime at least, or if at all possible, get as much exposure to the sun as you possibly can without burning yourself. You don't want to burn either, but at the same time, you don't have to be paranoid about the sun, because the sun provides the ultraviolet radiation that you need in order to manufacture vitamin D and possibly other nutrients. So the reality of the situation is that people are just not getting enough sunshine, and as a direct result of that, either they're going to have to take supplements, or they're going to have to learn how to get proper sun exposure.
And if they do go out in the sun without sunscreen, does it affect their vitamin D absorption if they come in and take a shower?
Yes, it does. You can actually wash away the vitamin D that you've manufactured from sunshine exposure from your skin by taking a shower and rubbing it off. You can rub it off your skin quite easily. It takes, like, I think, a couple of days, 48 hours, for that vitamin D to really sink into your system. The other thing is that if you're using sunscreens, you know, I've seen people who look completely brown to the point where they're almost black. And yeah, when you do their blood level of vitamin D, it's low. And the reason why is because they've used these chemical sunscreens that prevent the skin from manufacturing vitamin D as well. So, you know, you have to be careful with that. And when you take a shower, it's probably best that you just basically you don't rub off the vitamin D from your arms and legs. You can sort of wash your face without necessarily rubbing off everything. And, you know, you obviously want to scrub your underarms and your private areas, but stay away from rubbing the vitamin D from your arms and legs.
So when I was reading this, it made me think, I send my child to summer camp every year. So I know he gets lots of sun. But I also know that he's jumping in and out of the pool 50,000 times a day. So is he getting any vitamin D or not?
He should be getting it there. You know, you have to, in order to lose the vitamin D from your skin, you'd have to basically rub it off, you know. So just being in the water won't do that.
Okay, so it's not like water soluble and come off?
No, it won't come
okay.
off.
Okay, and if they are going to use sunscreens, what should they use?
Well, that's a good question. They probably should use a natural sunscreen that contains zinc oxide and maybe something called titanium dioxide. Those are two ingredients that are fairly safe and can prevent burning of the skin and will not cause you to lose too much vitamin D. Most people should put that on areas that are heavily exposed to sunshine, like you'll notice that people like tennis pros and golf pros, they put that on their nose or on their skin if they have a tendency to burn, and that prevents that from occurring.
Well, now that you speak of tennis, that was actually something that I was just sitting here thinking about. My husband was covered up in skin cancers. What do people like that do? I mean, how do they protect against that? They can't put it all over their body, but I mean, he had skin cancers all over his legs and all over his arms. What do you do?
Yeah, there are some people that are very much prone to that. But what I would advise those people to do is to supplement orally with high-dose vitamin D as well as omega-3 fatty acids. That would go a long way towards preventing that. The other thing that would help them would be high-dose vitamin E and other antioxidants. So they would be people that would need to take that on a regular basis, because if their skin is that sensitive, then they're not going to be able to prevent it any other way.
Okay. Is there any connection, beneficial or otherwise, between vitamin D and vitamin K when you're trying to control heart disease?
Yes. Well, vitamin K is something that may be very important for prevention of or treatment even of cancer. And so is vitamin D. There is a connection there between the two of them. They seem to work synergistically. There are some now good studies on vitamin K2 and vitamin K3, and its importance in reversing some liver cancers, for example.
I didn't know that. Do you need a cofactor with the vitamin K?
Yes. With the vitamin K, usually vitamin K2 and vitamin C are the two that will work together, and vitamin D also seems to make a big difference in reversing some cancers. I have seen vitamin D, for example, help keep both breast cancer and prostate cancer under control if the dosages are high enough, and there have been some studies to show a good connection between the level of vitamin D and the spread of cancer being controlled with it.
Any kind of cancer, a metastatic cancer as well?
Metastatic cancer as well, yes.
What about glioblastomas?
I don't know if there's been any studies done on glioblastomas. That's not one of the ones that's usually mentioned, but the ones that are the most important that seem to respond very well to vitamin D would include breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon cancer, uterine cancer, and...
So kind of like hormone-related cancers?
Pardon me?
Hormone-related cancers.
Hormone-related cancers, yes.
Okay.
Especially hormone-related cancers.
Okay. Well, we've got about 15 or 18 minutes. Is there anything you want to talk about that we haven't talked about?
Well, I think the most important thing I want to talk about is to encourage people to visit their doctor and get tested for vitamin D. I think too many people are shy to ask, or they don't think about it, but vitamin D is one of the most important things that you can do for prevention. You can prevent many diseases, apparently 50 or more diseases, if you have adequate levels of vitamin D. And I would encourage people to ask their doctors to get tested for what's called 25-hydroxyvitamin D. That's the most sensitive indicator of your vitamin D status. And it's a simple blood test. And you should probably get it done 2-3 times a year. So that would be my main advice for people listening to the show.
Okay. Well, can we ask some other questions about other things now?
Sure.
As we get older, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 50. And as I get older, I find that my muscles just aren't as toned, and my support system isn't as strong as it used to be. And so I wondered, what do you recommend for that? I personally have started taking a really good amino acid solution, and I wondered what you thought about amino acids and strengthening your muscles and tendons and ligaments. Or what do you recommend?
I think that's a great idea. A good amino acid solution that would include the branched chain amino acids, valine, leucine, and isoleucine, as well as arginine, ornithine. If you get a good broad-spectrum amino acid supplement, I think that's an excellent idea. That will certainly go a long way towards helping your muscle tone. The other thing I would recommend for most people, even though they may not necessarily be into, going into the gym or doing any kind of specific exercise, is creatine monohydrate. You've probably heard of creatine. Creatine is something that will improve muscle tone, muscle strength, muscle recovery. It's excellent for improving exercise tolerance, and that's another supplement I would recommend. The third thing I would recommend would be something called colostrum, bovine colostrum. That is loaded with a lot of very important nutrients. It's something that is found in pre-breast milk. That's before breast milk is manufactured by a woman's body for their baby's nutrition just after pregnancy. And colostrum contains a lot of factors that improve the health of muscles as well as the immune system. So those three things, I think, are probably very important. Now, there are some people that do extremely well with what are called bioidentical hormones, and these are provided in the form of a body cream. So we have things like, for example, the most important one being progesterone. That's the one I seem to prescribe a great deal for women. And also in men, as they get older, once they get into their mid-50s, usually they do well with a testosterone body cream, a bioidentical testosterone cream that they rub onto the skin twice a day. And that really seems to make a big difference in terms of muscle strength and muscle health. And all of those, I think, once again, you'd have to get lab testing done for some of those and prescribe accordingly.
Okay, I have one thing I want to say and then one question. The one thing I want to say is, if you're just to my listeners, and this is just my perspective, I'm not a doctor, but if your muscles are flabby, your heart is a muscle and it's probably going to be flabby too, right?
That's right. There's usually a correlation.
And the second thing was, you brought up bioidentical hormones. We have two kinds of bioidentical hormones. We have the pharmaceutical kind. Well, three kinds, I guess. And then we have the bioidentical hormones that's made from the pregnant horse urine. And we have plant-based bioidentical hormones. Which do you prefer and why?
I prefer the plant-based ones and not the pharmaceutical ones. I prefer the ones that are compounded by a pharmacist from basic natural ingredients. It's been shown by many different people that those are the ones that are least likely to produce any side effects. And what you're worried about here is, for example, with drugs like Premarin, Premarin has been shown to increase the incidence of breast cancer and other cancers. So you're worried about basically increasing the incidence of any of those cancers. And I find that with the bioidentical hormones, we don't run into any problems with any of the same side effects that we might with the drug form. For example, progesterone, the progesterone that comes from the drug companies basically will cause a lot of side effects, not just on the liver, but on many other organ systems. It will produce breast pain, and it will produce all kinds of symptoms. It's not really bioidentical. It's not what the body uses naturally. So I'm very much against those, and I prefer using the ones that are made from plant sources that are least likely to produce any kind of side effects.
What about, I've heard a lot of talk about human growth hormone, and it scares me to death, but one of my friends took some of it. She'd gained a lot of weight, and she took this stuff, and she lost a lot of weight. But it has side effects, doesn't it? Would you recommend someone taking it?
Growth hormone, aside from the cost, which is quite high, is the fact that it has potential side effects with blood sugar. It can actually accelerate or worsen diabetes. And, I think that there are those issues with growth hormone that it may stimulate the growth of some tumors that are already there, potentially, and accelerate cancer and other illnesses. I have some patients in my practice, for example, who suffer from too much growth hormone in their system, and they develop problems with their bones and bone structure. They develop a lot of pain syndromes, and they're given usually drugs to combat that. So growth hormone is not something that I would use very lightly.
Now, one more question. A lot of our girls today are getting, what is that, that cervical thing that they're getting? I can't think of the name of it right now.
Gardasil? The vaccine?
Yeah, but what are they giving that for? What is it?
Prevention of cervical cancer.
Yes, but it's
cervical dysplasia.
Yes,
I think.
Yes, but it's caused by
cervical dysplasia is thought to be caused by the human papillomavirus.
Yes, that's what I'm looking for. So what should girls do about that?
Well, girls should all be taking folic acid. Because if you use folic acid in high enough doses, you don't get cervical dysplasia and you don't get cervical cancer.
Can you do too much folic acid? I actually bought some for my daughter the other day, folic acid.
Well, you're smart to do that. You can't use too much. And don't listen to any of the baloney that's out there about folic acid being a problem, because it's been around for like 100 years or more, and it's been absolutely proven to prevent cervical dysplasia. I have proof of this in my practice on at least 100 women I've given folic acid to, and each one of them that had cervical dysplasia no longer has cervical dysplasia, and they're not about to get cervical cancer if they don't get dysplasia. So
what's the dosage? How do you determine it? Is it weight, or do you just give them a certain amount?
I put most women on between 5 and 10 milligrams a day, and in women that have cervical dysplasia, I put them on 50 milligrams a day.
And if you already take I give my family a very good plant-based vitamin, and it has that in it. Is that enough, or should I still supplement it?
Well, it depends if you're trying to prevent anything specific, but probably a good multiple vitamin, a plant-based one, is a good place to start.
Okay, so I shouldn't need to supplement her with the folic acid. I don't know why I did that. I just felt moved to do it.
Well, if she's in that age range, you know, between the ages of, let's say, 16 and 25, I would give them extra folic acid, an extra 5 milligrams a day.
That's a wonderful... I had no idea that it would prevent or cure it. I had no idea. That's a wonderful thing, you know, because so many, you know, probably, I'd say 7 out of 10 of her friends have that problem, that virus.
Yeah, they should all be on folic acid. I've had a lot of success using it in my practice.
Okay, let's see. What else? Fish oils. What do you recommend about fish oils?
Well,
and what kind, I guess, because people are running to the drugstore to buy fish oils. Is that going to work?
Fish oil is going to work if you take enough of it, and most adults should be taking about 4,000 milligrams or more a day. Fish oils will help in preventing excessive clotting of the blood. It's not going to replace a good diet. I mean, you're better off, you know, eating properly, but fish oils are anti-inflammatory as well, so they'll help you with your skin, hair, nails. They'll help you with your joints. So, you know, like I highly recommend that you get some fish oil. But look for the brands. Don't buy any of the pharmaceutical brands. I would suggest buying the ones that you find in the health food store from natural health care companies.
Just one thing I personally, I'm an experimenter. You know, because I study, supplements are my passion. I study everything. You probably can tell from my questions. But I got some from, I don't know, Vitacost or somewhere, and they were supposed to be good quality fish oil, but every time I take them, they make my ears burn. I know that sounds crazy, but it's true. And so I stopped doing that, because when I stopped doing that, my ears stopped burning, and I bought the fish oil from Barry Sears, and it doesn't give me bowel problems, and I don't have that burning in my ear anymore. So do you...
One of the problems with some of the fish oils is that they contain traces of mercury, and they don't list mercury on the label. I would recommend some really reputable brands like Carlson, AOR, Natural Factors, possibly others, Twin Labs. All of these people make good quality fish oils.
Okay. And what other thing? Selenium. What do you recommend about selenium?
Yeah, selenium is very important, but it has a problem with possible toxicity if you go above 600 micrograms a day. So you have to be careful with how much you take. Usually between 200 and 600 micrograms a day is a good dose to prevent different kinds of cancers, particularly lung cancer and liver cancer and prostate cancer.
One of the things people say to me when I talk to them about minerals and things, magnesium, selenium, is, well, I eat a lot of vegetables. Do you think that we are getting our nutrients in our vegetables today?
If you're buying organic vegetables, probably yes, but most people don't get that, and they're using vegetables that are sprayed or are, you know, not the healthiest, and they're generally lower in all of those nutrients. Most of the commercially bought vegetables are deficient in trace minerals like selenium. You can get oranges which contain virtually no vitamin C, for example. You know, you basically, if you're eating organically, that's quite different. But if you're buying the usually available commercial foods, your micronutrient intake will be not high enough to prevent all kinds of illnesses.
Okay, one more question, and then we're going to be out of time. Chromium and vanadium, or vanadil,
what
are those for? What do we use those for?
Well, chromium and vanadium are two minerals that are very important for glucose tolerance, and so for people that have diabetes or hypoglycemia, they may be very important. Chromium, usually about 1,000 micrograms or 1 milligram a day, and vanadium, that's a very controversial one. There are people that say that it's quite toxic, although there are some doctors like Dr. Julian Whitaker who recommend that you take 50 to 150 milligrams a day. So it depends on who you want to believe there. I've not seen any toxicities occurring with vanadium, but vanadium or vanadyl sulfate is the one that's being used, and that's very effective for controlling blood sugar.
Do you take them both or one or the other?
If you're diabetic, I would take them both.
Okay. What about if you have hypoglycemia?
Especially if you have hypoglycemia, I would take them both as well.
Because I found, like I said, I experimented with everything. When I took chromium, I'm good. When I take vanadium, I get these fainting episodes. So does that mean it's dropping it too low?
That might be happening, yeah. Or you might be sensitive to excessive amounts of vanadium in your system. There are some people that react badly to both chromium and vanadium, so you have to be careful there.
Okay. You're just a wealth of knowledge. I could pick your brain for the rest of the night. I love it. Thank you. Thank you for coming on my show, and maybe you'll come back sometimes because I still have a list of questions that I didn't get to, but thank you.
Sure.
Thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you very much.
And good night.
Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health. Integral Health. Integral Health. You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health. Consciousness and health. Consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr.